I want to take up with you today what I have termed, for want of a better phrase, human perfection of the material state. Jesus explained it perfectly when, in giving us what has come to be known as the Lord's Prayer, he said, quote, "After this manner, therefore, pray ye, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." Close quote. Now, one cannot think of the kingdom of heaven without gaining some concept of perfection. One thinks of heaven, in fact, as the acme of perfection, spiritual perfection. In fact, the kingdom of heaven is the ultimate of all endeavor. It is the Christ enthroned in consciousness to the complete exclusion of all error. The kingdom of heaven is the perfection of life and truth and principle and mind and spirit and soul and love enthroned in individual consciousness. The perfection of heaven is that beyond which there is nothing, no progress, and no goal. So, in the contemplation of heaven, we conceive of naught but perfection in its spiritual significance. One realizes, of course, that a perfect spiritual state eliminates completely all matter and material creation or existence. Therefore, to speak of human perfection of the material state might seem a contradiction. But Jesus certainly had some sense of a material condition free from the secondary beliefs of mortal mind or the carnal mind when he said, quote, "Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." Close quote. The will of God in the realm of the spiritual is heaven enthroned. The will of God in the realm of the material must be another thing, and we certainly cannot contemplate the will of God being done on earth as it is in heaven without gaining some sense of material perfection from the human standpoint. It is clear that a consciousness utterly devoid of any sense of God or God's will would be quite a different consciousness than the consciousness filled with the love of God. As the outward manifestation, or the physical manifestation, is the product of consciousness, individual consciousness, it is clear that a physical universe which is the object of a human consciousness, and which knows nothing of God or truth, would be quite a different physical universe from one which is the object of a human consciousness impregnated with an understanding of God. And it is also clear that as the physical universe is the object of the individual human consciousness, the physical universe in the experience of each individual must gradually improve as individual human consciousness grows in its understanding of God. Therefore, the physical universe of an individual whose mind contains naught of truth must be quite a different universe from that which that same individual would be conscious of after gaining truth and growing in the study and contemplation thereof. That is, a person today who knew naught of God and the teachings of Christian Science would look out upon an entirely different world from that which he might look out upon 5 or 10 years hence if, in the meantime, he has gained an understanding of God through Christian Science. In the first place, we must gain a clear understanding of the difference between the carnal mind, or mortal mind, on the one extreme, and the divine mind, or God, on the other extreme, with the human mind sandwiched in between the two. We have dwelt on that thoroughly at one time and another, but to handle the whole question in its entirety, we must take it up again. In Science and Health, in her definition of the word Euphrates, Mrs. Eddy says, as a part of that definition, quote, "The atmosphere of human belief before it accepts sin, sickness, or death. A state of mortal thought, the only error of which is limitation. Finity, the opposite of infinity." Close quote. Here, Mrs. Eddy recognizes a sinless state of human belief, the only error of which is limitation. By limitation, she means circumscription or objectification, confinement. When she refers to this state of human belief before it accepts sin, she emphasizes the fact that this human belief is a state of consciousness capable of accepting or rejecting carnal or sinful thoughts. She says that this human belief is a state of mortal thought, the only error of which is limitation. That is, that localization is the only error which characterizes this state of human belief before it accepts sin, etc. Therefore, aside from this claim of localization or limitation, this human belief or human mind is sinless. If this human mind should be freed from this claim of limitation or localization before it accepted the arguments of sin, sickness, matter, etc., it would then be submerged in the divine to the extent that the claim of limitation or localization would completely disappear in pure spirituality. Now, this human belief or human mind, which is capable of accepting or rejecting sin, sickness, matter, etc., gradually takes to itself these elements of the carnal mind, which compound and increase themselves, until this human mind becomes the possessor of so much of the carnal that it is objectified to the human mind or consciousness as a human body, a material world, sickness, poverty, distress, accidents, degradation, etc. All of this because of the claim of limitation or localization, which denies an infinite God and man in the image and likeness of infinity. The human body is not self-created. It is the mental projection or objectification of carnal thoughts which the human mind has voluntarily admitted. The human body is not guilty of sin and sickness. It is not the author of the sins and the crimes which it is supposed to commit. It, in itself, is almost as sinless and as blameless as the human mind before it accepts sin, sickness, and death.